And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for the first program of The Law and You for 2022. And apologies for the little glitch there with the intro to the program and the weather playing over the top of themselves, but I'm sure you'll get the weather after the news on the half hour. So this is your opportunity to get free legal advice right here on 4CRB. All you need to do is get on the telephone, and our number is 55208888. That's 55208888. If you're south of the Tweed River, of course, you need to put 07 in front of that phone number. And you can always use our email address, which is talkback@4crb.com. That's talkback@4crb.com. And we can answer those questions received by email in our program next week. But it's all about your calls, and that's what we need on the telephone straight away. And who would like to be our very first caller for 2022? That privilege is open to you right now if you get on the telephone, 55208888. But while we're waiting for some calls to come in, just a few things that I think are important to talk about, and one that I'm always minded to raise in the first program back after the Christmas break is refund policies. Now, what an interesting topic this is. And so often people think that if they buy goods, that they can simply take them back. Or if you get a Christmas present that you're not particularly enamoured with, you can take it back and get a refund, or at the very least exchange it. Now, that is not the situation at law. So if a company does have a refund policy, it's not required to advertise what its refund policy is, but if they do have a refund policy, then it must be accurate. And refund policies that say no refunds, no exchanges are actually illegal. Because under the Australian consumer law, of course, there are certain circumstances in which you are entitled to a refund. And they're, of course, laid out under the legislation. Things like if the goods are defective, they're not fit for purpose, a whole range of things. But it's not simply because you change your mind, or it's not the colour you like, or things such as that. So don't automatically think that you can take goods back and get a refund or an exchange. As you would probably be aware, most of the major chain stores and the major retail stores do have very generous refund and exchange policies. They are becoming a little bit tighter, and these days, in order to get a refund, you, I think in most instances, are required to produce the receipt to prove that the goods have been purchased. And sadly, that's, I think, a result of the exponential growth in shoplifting, which has caused companies to have very tight policies in relation to refund and exchange. So just bear that in mind, that if you're wanting to refund, get a refund or exchange at one of the major chains, which do have quite liberal policies, you need to ensure that you have your receipt to get a refund at the very least. Some companies will in fact allow an exchange even if you don't have the receipt, as long as they are reasonably satisfied that you bought the goods from their store. But the program is The Law and You. It's free legal advice between now and 9:30. That's 10:30 New South Wales time. And our telephone number is 55208888. The lines are open. We have no calls on the log at the moment, so you can be our very first caller for 2022. Fairly topical thing at the moment, and dominating the news, of course, has been the deportation of Novak Djokovic in relation to the tennis. And you've probably needed to be on planet Mars not to have seen this in the news in recent times. There's been a lot said about how the government handled this, etc. And a lot of it, I think, has been quite unfair. I was a registered migration agent as well as being a lawyer for many, many years. I'm no longer a registered migration agent. I do have a little bit of knowledge in relation to how the migration system works and how the visa system works. And from what I've been able to glean, The situation is that when Novak Djokovic originally arrived in Australia, he was actually on the wrong visa. He had applied for the wrong visa, and the visa he came in on did not allow entry on medical exemption purposes. Now, it's my understanding that Border Force contacted the Victorian government asking whether they would support the entry of Novak Djokovic, and they refused, and the result was that Border Force had no option but to deny him entry. And then obviously from there we went to the appeal, which said that due process, or that he had not been allowed due process in relation to his entry. And I think in particular that was because Border Force had told him he had until, from memory, 8:30 a.m. to make comments or to provide submissions, and at some time around about 6:30, Border Force made the decision that they were not going to grant him the visa to enter. So then, of course, we moved on to the appeal process, and it's quite settled law that the minister does have a discretion to refuse entry. And that's, of course, exactly what the Minister for Immigration did. And, of course, the High Court has held up the minister's power in a decision which is beyond question. The three judges sitting as the full federal court found that the minister was acting lawfully when he exercised his discretion. So that's basically, as I see it, what happened. There's obviously a lot of spin about the implications for Australia and all that sort of thing, but I think it seems to be playing out that really that Australia was acting in accordance with its laws, and that the appropriate decision was made. But enough of that. We've got our callers online, and we'll say a very good morning to our first caller for 2022, Virginia. Good morning, Virginia. How are you today?
I'm very well, Jonathan. How are you?
Yeah, well, indeed. Thanks. How can I help you?
John, I'm divorced with no dependents. I didn't have any children. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, am I obliged under Australian law to leave money or part of my property to nieces and nephews?
No.
Good, okay.
That's a very simple answer, isn't it? It's actually, yeah. Isn't it amazing? Lawyers invariably will say, it depends. That's often the answer that lawyers have to give, because the law is quite often not black and white. But in this particular case, Virginia, it's a definitive no. You do not have to leave anything to your nieces and nephews. The only people who have a claim on your estate are your spouse, and of course you're now divorced, so even if you still had a will which left part of your estate to your former spouse, that provision under your will is now invalid and of no effect. The other one that you need to leave something to are children, and the third category is someone who's financially dependent upon you. So they're the three categories, but certainly nieces and nephews, for in your case grandchildren, in the case of grandparents, unless the grandchildren are financially dependent upon the grandparents, so they don't come within the class who can challenge a will.
Oh, good. What about my eldest brother?
No.
I died before he does. No, he lives in a different country anyway. But I just wondered. I want to actually leave my house to medical research and
yes.
to animal charities.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you've got to give to those that need it, and
yes, that's
I need
for sure.
to those that don't need it. Oh, that's lovely, John. Thank you very much for clearing that up for me.
No trouble at all.
I do like listening to your show. Thank you,
Virginia. The only thing I would mention, Virginia, is that if you do die without a will, and so you die okay, that's fine, because you would then die intestate. And if you die intestate, there's a whole range of relatives who then come into play. But if you have a valid will, you can leave your estate to whomever you please.
Oh, great. That's lovely. Thank you very much, John.
Okay, then.
And I hope I don't die too soon.
So do I. All the very best, Virginia. And the time on 4CRB is 15 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. As we say good morning to Val. G'day, Val. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Well, indeed. How can I help you today?
Look, I'm just wondering about wills.
Yes.
I just sort of heard the previous one. But the thing is, I have three children, and there's one in particular that I have to leave something to every child before they can contest it?
No. So your children automatically have a right under the law to contest your will, because they come within the class of persons who are able to do so. But the mere fact that they come within the class of persons who are able to contest your will doesn't mean that they will be successful in doing so. So if there are reasons why a particular child, you don't wish to include a particular child in your will, then you need to clearly articulate those reasons, and you need to discuss those reasons with a lawyer who specialises in the area of wills and estates, because it's very, very important that you carefully record the reasons why you're excluding a child, if that's your intention. And the old myth that if you leave something to each child, they can't contest your will is also incorrect, because a child can make an application for further provision if they don't believe that the provision they're receiving out of the estate is enough.
Okay. So if I listed all the reasons why a particular child shouldn't receive anything and just leave her a minimal amount, would that cover me that so she could not contest?
Well, there's no need to leave them anything if you don't want to leave them anything.
Okay.
But you can, you certainly can leave something to that child. Bear in mind that children are entitled to a copy of your will, so
yep.
I would not recommend that you put in your will the reasons why you're leaving a child out, or you've made a lesser provision for that child, because that can often be a trigger for a child to say, oh, well, I'll show mum and I'll contest the will, and then you get a whole lot of the estate eaten up in legal costs.
Yep.
If you do it by way of a separate document, which we refer to as a statement of testamentary wishes, which is done in the form of
a statement of testamentary wishes,
and it's done in the form of a statutory declaration, and that would set out the reasons why you're excluding that child, or you've made a lesser provision for that child, so that it's not in the will and it doesn't act as a to humiliate the child or trigger them to bring a claim where they might see the will and see that they've either been left out or alternatively been left a lesser amount, and they very well may say, oh, well, I suppose I was a pretty awful child and I can sort of understand why mum's made no provision for me, so I'll let it lie. Whereas if you have a will which says, I haven't left anything to my daughter Dora because she's a scumbag, then that just very well may prove the trigger that makes them decide they're going to make a claim.
Okay. Now, someone said to me, if you're doing a will, you're better off to do a trust. Now, is that true or not?
Depends on your circumstances, Val. Depends on the value of the estate, and it depends on the circumstances of your children or the beneficiaries. So if, for example, you have a substantial estate and you're intending to leave these days, I would say that you wouldn't really consider testamentary trusts at less than around about $200,000, but just because of the administration costs. But but if your children are in, for example, a marriage where you're worried that the marriage may not last, if they're in a high-risk profession where they could be sued for negligence, or they're in a business which is not going particularly well and there's a chance the business may fold and they may go bankrupt, then they're all circumstances that could lead you to setting up a testamentary discretionary trust for one or more of your children.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your advice. It was very, very helpful, because I was finding it difficult to get some answers. So that cleared up what I needed to know. Thank you so much.
No trouble at all, Val. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 20 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. We did have Thomas online a couple of times and he's dropped out. So I don't know, Thomas, whether you're having trouble getting through or maybe you're just in a bad area for mobile phone reception. But presently the lines are all free. So, Thomas, if you wanted to ring back right now, you would get straight through. But otherwise, the number 5520888, that's the number. The show is The Law and You. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice, and this is our first program for 2022. We'll be back after our word from our sponsor.
Bell Legal Group is the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Their highly experienced team of professionals can provide assistance in wills and estate planning, property law and conveyancing, family law, business and commercial law, and much, much more. Contact our sponsor, Bell Legal Group, on 5597 3366. That number again, 5597 3366. Or learn more about what they can offer you at belllegal.com.au.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB, and it's your opportunity to get free legal advice. 5520888 is the number, 07 in front of that number if you're south of the Tweed River. We presently have no callers online, so if you have a question or a query, you will get straight through. 5520888. While we're waiting for some more calls, one topic which probably flows on from those that we've been talking about with our first two callers in relation to wills that struck me over the Christmas New Year period was a great article I read about the situation with pets under your will. So I will, if I have an opportunity, get to that in a moment, but we do have a caller online, Kay, so we'll say a very good morning to Kay. Hi, Kay, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thanks. How can I help?
We live in a duplex. Mm-hmm. Our back fence has a retaining wall that's cemented. All the rocks are cemented together.
Mm-hmm.
But they're rocks. They're not blocks. The house at the back of us, it's about, their fence is about 4 feet behind our retaining wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's huge trees right along in their area.
Mm-hmm.
And our retaining wall's starting to crack.
Mm-hmm.
Got a crack right along, which we believe is because of the big trees.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we stand there?
Right. Have you spoken to the people behind in relation to the problem?
No, we haven't. We only found it yesterday, so
right,
I thought
okay.
I'd just ask where we stand.
Right. Well, the first thing I would be doing is going and speaking to the neighbours and saying, look, we've just discovered that we believe the tree roots from these trees are starting to cause this retaining wall to give way.
Yes.
So we'd like to discuss with you what we can do.
Yes.
There are obviously options available. One would be, if it's still possible, to put a root barrier between the retaining wall and the trees, but there may not be enough room to do that. The second option, of course, would be to pull the trees out, which is probably something the neighbours may not be enamoured about.
No. The unit next door, they had trouble with all the trees too, and
right.
they had theirs pulled down. They had to get him to take the trees down, which he took down last year.
Yes.
But they just left this other small area that's our spot, sort of on the end of our property.
Mm. Yes, well, look, I would speak to the owner. There's obviously a precedent being set there. If the owner won't agree to do it for any reason, then your only option is to bring an application before QCAT. I assume you're in Queensland?
Yes, we are.
Mm. So bring an application before the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal for them to adjudicate in relation to an order to be made for the trees probably to be removed, as it seems that that's the precedent that's been set. But hopefully, because that's already happened with the units next door, the owner is aware that there is a problem and therefore you might be able to follow the same process. I would suggest that you could also probably speak to the chairman of the body corporate next door and just ask them how they dealt with it with the owner to find out, you know, whether it was an amicable process or not.
Yeah, we don't have a bodily corporate. They're just standalone duplexes.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, so it's the duplex next door that has had part of it the trees removed. Yes. Oh, we'll speak to the owner next door and just find out what process they went through. They may be able to just give you the heads up on whether the owner at the back is approachable or not.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, all the very best. And time on 4CRB, 25 minutes past 9, past 10 on the tweet, as we say good morning to Alan. G'day, Alan. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Just a quick question.
Sure.
The approximate cost or guide to the cost of a discretionary trust will be?
Of a testamentary discretionary trust? Yes, well, look, you're probably looking for a fairly uncomplicated testamentary discretionary trust will. Alan, you're probably looking at around about $1,500 to $1,750 plus GST.
Right, okay. Mm. So that's basically a starting point.
Yes, that would be a starting point. If it's a fairly straightforward situation, then that figure would be in the ballpark. It's obviously a far more complicated will than just a standard will, and that's the reason why there's additional cost in it. And there's also, I was talking earlier about a document called a Statement of Testamentary Wishes, which is a statutory declaration which supports the will, and that's also included in that cost.
Okay, if two sort of people involved as far as beneficiaries go, is that one on each person, is that sort of approximately two times 1,700?
No, because if you've got two beneficiaries and you want testamentary trusts for both of them, then you can do it in the one will and that cost would cover the two.
Right, okay.
Yep, so it's fairly easy to do.
Yeah, that's just approximate. Thanks. Okay, John, thank you very much and have a good day.
Yep, you too, Alan. All the very best. And we have one more caller online. Brian, good morning, Brian. Brian, how are you today?
Not too bad. I'm just getting over a bad fall, but otherwise I'm okay.
I hope you have a quick recovery.
Yeah, well, it's been 5 months and it's still the same, but
how can we help you today?
Well, I have a fairly large amount of money when I pass away, which I don't intend to do yet.
Good on you.
But what I've done, I've left a house to a very good friend of mine, as a gift, and the remainder I've left to my niece, which is quite a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have other nieces and nephews who I haven't seen for 20, 30 years.
Mm.
Now, would they have any claim if they hear that this niece has got this money?
No. So you haven't previously made a will that's included any of those nephews and nieces?
No, not at all.
Okay, no. So the short answer to your question is no. If it's a fairly large sum of money you've left to this niece, Brian, you may wish to consider whether it's appropriate to put it into a testamentary discretionary trust for her under your will, but that's entirely a decision for you. And the house you're leaving to
your... She's the executor of the will too.
Yeah, well, that's okay. But you would need to talk to your lawyer about that in terms of whether that's appropriate. With the house that you're leaving to your friend, is that the house you live in?
No.
Okay.
That's an investment one.
Okay. Well, just bear in mind that if your friend were to sell that house, that there will be capital gains tax on it, and the cost base will be your cost base. So it would be advisable to keep details of how much you paid for the house when you bought it, etc., so that you give the beneficiary some information to assist in determining the cost base and what capital gains tax may be applicable if and when they decide to sell.
Oh, I said, well, I know that she wouldn't decide to sell.
Right, but eventually there will be a sale, because if that person moves in and lives there, the time that you've owned it as an investment property is still the gain in the property between when you bought it and the date of your death when they move in is still ultimately going to be classified as a capital gain. So
that'll come out of the will.
No, that will only occur when she sells the property.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
oh,
but okay. It is advisable, therefore, for her to know the value of the property when you pass away, because if she moved in as her principal place of residence, from then on there would be no capital gains.
That's what she would do.
Yeah. All right then.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Okay, Brian. All the very best. And we still have Dennis online, but Dennis, if you're listening, if you can just wait there, I'll take that call offline because, unfortunately, we have the local news pressing down upon us. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for another program of The Law and You. First program for 2022. I'll look forward to being with you right through the year. Until next week, though, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm, helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 5597 3366.